Rashi, you look excited. How come?
Oh, I'm up to 478,000 matches.
Matches for
yeah,
what?
Yeah, I'm getting ready for the family reunion.
The family reunion. What are you going to do? Set fire to everybody?
Well, yeah, but indirectly because I didn't want to get blamed for it, so I'm in charge of the fireworks.
The fireworks?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We're having the family reunion in Wyoming, and that's your favorite place to buy fireworks at the big at the fireworks and taxidermy shop.
Yes, as you called it, heaven.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool place. We almost didn't get you out of it last time.
Yeah, you won't get me out of it this time either. Actually, you also might not get out of it. Come on, July.
Hi, I'm Paul Dini.
And I'm Misty Lee. I'm going to be out of the room.
Misty's running back and forth. Rashi seems to be awfully excited. We're having a big family reunion in July and in a state where he can buy fireworks legally. I mean, he is only a sock monkey, but if he goes in there with $20, they'll sell
anybody.
They'll sell him to anyone, yeah.
Anybody with a dollar and all their teeth has good credit in Wyoming.
You don't have any teeth.
You know,
I did see you squirreling away a $20 bill, so that's your munitions money, is it?
Oh, it's just the beginning, Dad.
We actually found a store in Wyoming that sold, the only thing they sold was taxidermy and fireworks.
Yeah!
It's the greatest store in the world. So Rashi will be hitting that before the family reunion. So if there are no more podcasts in August, you'll know...
And no more fireworks in Wyoming!
Yeah, you'll know that the... family reunion was a rousing success.
Wyoming just gets blown off the map.
It could happen. It could happen. Monkey with a lot of matches can do a lot of damage with use of mine too. So your Comic-Con is like 2 months to the day, almost exactly. You guys are going, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. First time as a pro.
Oh, yeah. Right. You're a professional. Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
And did you find a place to stay?
Yeah, we're staying at a Motel 6, just, close by, just outside the city.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we used to take the train, but now they have buses they offer there.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so it commutes everyone in, saves on parking, and because parking's been getting a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't park anywhere near there.
No.
It's nonsense.
And they sell them as, like, pre-passes now, where you gotta... buy a pass to park for the entire weekend for like a couple hundred bucks.
Really?
Yeah.
You might as for that kind of money, you might as well get your car a ticket to the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Let it roam around the floor or something.
Buy it a booth so you could just drive in onto the floor.
That's not a bad idea. Although you probably have to get a union guy to actually drive the car in there.
That's true.
Yeah. It's such a crapshoot. I'm kind of amazed, and I've already made up my mind that next year I'm going to go for a day. I'm going to, and I may change, I'll probably change my mind or something, but right now I'm just thinking for 2014, I'd like to go down maybe Friday or Saturday early in the morning, like take the first train down.
Yeah.
Walk around all day, see whatever panel I want to see, see whatever friend I want to see, for dinner, and then just come back that night and just, have done with it.
Yeah,
because this year I'm a guest, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I've actually been working months in advance, lining up dinners. I have not only do I have my hotel reservation, I have dinner reservations, and I'm seeing this person on this night, and this person on this night, and then I've got a breakfast over here because I want to get all that stuff down so so I can keep moving the entire time. Mm-hmm. But and I'm really looking forward to the panels and that I'm doing, and I think maybe next week or the week after, or the next couple of podcasts, I'll announce what my schedule is going to be because we got a couple of things that are really kind of exciting. They may fall through at the last minute, but once I get confirmation from the convention that we're definitely doing it, then I'll announce what it is and where to go and what you'll see
fun.
And everything.
Yeah.
But so that'll be fun, and then next year I may take the year off or just go down for a day. Because it's just, it's getting harder and harder to do it. And I just, I don't want to put up with the rigmarole of the hotels and everything like that. Yeah.
Well, I feel fortunate. This year is pretty much the first year where I have paid vacation and such. So I can actually take time off, go down like a little early so I'm not rushing down there with the rest of the crowds.
Yeah.
And then maybe leave a little later and not feel like I have to get back for work the next day. And not worry about how much I'm making that week because I'm not making anything while I'm there.
Right, right.
So I'm actually going to probably be able to enjoy it a lot more than I usually do.
Well, yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, when I really used to enjoy the con was back in, I guess, the mid-90s. You know, the Batman had just come on. I remember that one year when we premiered the first few Batman episodes down there. I guess it was like 92 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And people really had no idea what they were looking at. And
that must have been amazing.
Yeah, and people were kind of like, they were just kind of stunned. Like, oh, it looks kind of good. And wow, you know. And we didn't know if it was going to be any good or not. But yeah. Everybody seemed to enjoy it. Then 93, we were kind of, you know, it was like, hey, oh, the Batman guys are here. So we got to be big shots at you. That nice. Was fun. Back then, we would just kind of take a few days off from work, go down, and you could make a hotel reservation at the last minute.
Oh, yeah. You got to do it a year ahead of time now.
Yeah. And we would stay up late drawing sketches in each other's rooms. You know, we'd bring our sketchbooks, and we'd get some really great artwork. And everybody, you know, nobody charged for anything. It's just like, here, give me your sketchbook, and you get a really
cool
drawing of a character or something. And then and it was just fun hanging out. And then, of course, year after year, it got bigger and bigger. And now it's like a show business event.
Yeah.
And so, but this year, I'm looking forward to it. So
it's still nice because, and what you said about sketching and just being with your friends, stuff like, yeah. I get to spend the weekend with one of my best friends, and we like to collaborate and mm-hmm. create ideas. And that's always a fun time for us to just put new ideas together because we're around each other 24/7. We can spitball ideas back and forth all weekend long.
Right, right.
And that's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the real enjoyment to be had during the convention takes place outside of the convention floor. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It can be fun if you really got your heart set on seeing a celebrity waiting in to go into the big room and seeing them, or, you know, if you want to do more of a one-on-one, going into one of the small rooms and talking to a professional. A couple of years ago, they honored Gilbert Shelton.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the creator of the Freak Brothers. And I went to his panel because I just, you know, I love the Freak Brothers and I just wanted mm-hmm. to hear him talk. And wasn't saying much, but it was just sort of cool to see him there.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I remember always going to see, for a long time, there was like the trio of Ray Harryhausen, Ray Bradbury, and like Forry Ackerman. And they were all just sort of holding court and everything. And it's like, oh, they're all gone now.
Yeah. Harryhausen just recently.
Ray Harryhausen just passed away. And Bradbury was, what, a year ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Time marches on. Sure and still, I don't know. It's... should be fun, and the more fun I can find is even years ago I would go down early and I'd take a surfboard, I'd go surfing with Kevin Altieri, one of the Batman directors, and that was fun. And I'm a terrible surfer, but I would do it just for the sake of like, what are you doing today at the convention? I'm going surfing. I'm getting up at 7 and I'm driving out into La Jolla and we're going surfing. And it's like, you're really That's doing that?
Awesome.
It's like, well, why not? It makes Comic-Con feel more like a vacation.
Yeah.
When you're there on the floor, it's like a pressure cooker. And before you know it, it's Monday morning and you're home and your bank account's drained and you've got a stack of books you're never going to read and your feet are blistered. And
that's a great
you've
got
to go to work and you go, what happened?
That's, like, yeah, I need to do more of that. And we need to like go visit things while we're down there.
Just go to the zoo or something. Yeah. You know, you make time, you go to the zoo or you go over, you get in the car or you get in a bus or something and you drive to maybe a restaurant. You know, you figure out what sounds good
mm-hmm.
and, but not around the Gaslight area because everything is sold out. But you go out to the neighborhoods or something like that and you eat out there. I did that once with a group of artists. I went out way late at night to some like 24-hour coffee shop near the campus, and it was great. And it's when you're sitting around talking, and it's late night, and you're away from the convention floor. That's when Comic-Con is really magical. Like one year, I went out with Frank Miller, Leonard Starr, Carol Kalish, and my friend Richard Howell, and we were all sitting in the basement. We were all sitting in like the underground bar area of a Mexican restaurant, and We were just listening to Leonard Starr, who was, drew Mary Perkins on stage and then drew the Orphan Annie comic strip, just talking about being a strip cartoonist. And we were just sort of in awe of listening to his adventures of, you know, working in comic strips and everything. And like I said, you know, the bar's okay, but the bars are kind of a scene. And I remember like 3 or 4 years ago, Misty went and they had a part, we got invited to a party. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of on the... You know, we go to this party, and it's at a big hotel, and you can hear the house music coming from outside. We walk in, and we're allowed into the basic party, but we're not allowed into the celebrity party room. And I'm going like, there's a celebrity party room at Comic-Con? And I can see, you know, just guys I work with all the time there, but for whatever reason, we don't have the right, you know, wristband and everything. And I'm going like, once it comes down to, I don't really care because... They're right there. They're in the same room, but there's just a little divider. And no one's eating for free. No one's drinking for free. There's no TV celebrities. There's just, you know, it's actually gotten to that point. And I won't go to anything like that. But yeah. I'll gladly go off to, hit a taco stand with some old friends and, you know, just shoot the shit for 2 hours. Yeah. That to me is where it's really worthwhile going. The other stuff is like,
yeah, I always enjoyed the random meetings of people, you know, people that you either respected or, you know, liked your entire life, and you just randomly run into them, have a conversation. That's always my favorite, especially after the Eisners or something. That's always common at those places.
Yeah.
Just be talking to somebody, oh, you're George R. R. Martin, or, oh, I have a whole conversation with Jason Ritter, John Ritter's son.
Yeah.
And not realize it until, like, halfway through the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Or I used to walk the floor with Ray Bradbury when he was on a walker, you know, but he was still spry as ever. And, you know, the delight in his face of seeing it all there, you know, mm-hmm. like things that he had worked on or envisioned or helped bring into life and somehow, you know, he was sort of like just very happy to be there, you know, talking to Mark Evanier, you know, getting him, you know, between any of his 75 panels he does per day.
Yeah. When he's at cons, I always feel like he just doesn't recognize me because he's in such a whirlwind of activity. I'm just like, hey, Mark. He's just, yeah, hey.
Yeah.
Just clueless about what's going on other than what's directly in front of him. And
he's either laser focused.
Yeah.
Or else it's like, you know, what? But, you know, he's on his way to a panel somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Or he's doing
a panel. He's busy. He's, you know, he is the chairman of con.
He's the Lord High Mayor of Comic-Con. In fact, they should give him a sash.
Yeah.
Like H.R. Puffin stuff or something, and a top hat, you know. Lord High Mayor of Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And they should have him make a speech at the opening of each one, you know, like welcoming everybody. And except he wouldn't do that. If he's not doing a panel, then he's over at the Rib Place and holding court over there, which is a lot of fun, too. That rib place burned down a few years, and they built it right back up.
Oh, which rib place is that? Oh, you probably don't want to say.
Well, I don't remember the name of it. It's like a barbecue place. It's... You know where the Manchester Grand Hyatt is?
Yeah.
It's directly across the street from there. It's right where the train turns, and there's a barbecue place, and that's where they... Top Gun place. That's what I call it. That's because they shot
part of it. That's where we saw Gary Coleman, isn't it?
That's right. Gary Coleman was having ribs there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Poor little Gary Coleman.
It probably, I hate to say it, but it probably looked like a Flintstones episode where he just has the rib next to him, and it's like the size of a brontosaurus rib.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you just see, at some point you see everybody there, and you run into people around town, and it's quite a circus. You know, once you're away from the convention center, the dealer's room, and everything, I still call it the dealer's room. It's like this mammoth, you know, organism unto itself. That's when it begins to get fun, because then you see there are the odd celebrities you've seen here and there. It's that guy or that girl from that sci-fi channel movie that you cannot remember to save your life. And then it's cosplayers dressed as obscure superheroes and heroines or anime characters. And now it's zombies, rotting
or gladiators.
Blood.
Every gladiators? Year I see all the Spartacus gladiators. They're just
really?
So prolific to me. Maybe it's I just see them because they're running around in leather and nothing else.
But, really?
Yeah. Wow. Ever since that Blood and Spartan, I've been seeing them every year.
Wow. I see. I notice, like, Well, there's the anime characters with the with a purple and pink hair.
Yeah.
And then there's the video game characters, and there's the Adventure Time characters, and then there's the goth. The standard. I'm not any sort of character. Goth type, rockabilly type, rock and roll type, gamer punks. You know, who are just sort of everywhere. And then there's one or two. You know, like families. You know, like dad, good old dad, taking the kids to Comic-Con, and that's always cute. You know, see a dad in a rolled up button down Brooks Brothers shirt, you know, I'm bringing Tad here to get his comic book signed by Stan Lee. And you look at Tad's got a crew cut and he's wearing his little Superman cape from last Halloween. He has no idea where he is. He's just
completely overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's fun. And last couple of years, there's been this Boston Terrier driving around on a motorcycle, you know, wearing a little leather jacket and goggles and, Chopper, the motorcycle dog. That's right.
Missed him. Oh, I gotta keep my eye.
I got
out.
A picture of him on my phone.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, Chopper's pretty special.
Chopper the biker dog.
Yep. And everything else, and as far as you know, at one point I really could do business there, but I can't anymore. Yeah. You know, I can't stop over anybody's booth and do business like at the DC booth.
Mm.
It's just one tsunami of flesh after another, just waves of people coming in, and you can kind of cling to frantically to the edge of a table where somebody is signing, and hold on there, or you know, or try and have your place in line. But it's like waves of people coming in, and just if you're standing in the middle, like you want to look at the DC Direct thing, or the Arkham games, they always have a setup of those. Mm-hmm. You just get washed away just with the tide of people coming in. So, you know, for me to go over and talk to an editor that I'm working on, it's like I have to book them now for breakfast, you know, and and see them there and have breakfast with them and
away like from the show. Eating with them or like an afterthought if you run into them. You're like, oh, by the way, get in contact with me afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Or I swear, I bet the only time I see Jeff Loeb is going to be at the Marvel TV panel.
Yeah.
And he's going to be up and he's going to be premiering, you know, everything we have on the air this year, including the new S.H.I.E.L.D. show, which looks kick-ass.
Yeah,
and
then, does.
I'll just see him in a room full of people and, you know, as he's bringing one thing out after another and everybody else will just see it work, you know, on Sunday. And it's like, were you there? Yeah, where were you? It's the other end of like 16 million people.
Yeah.
My fantasy is one day to take a boat down, to go down to San Pedro, rent. You can actually rent this. They have a rentable pirate ship off of San Pedro, and I know this because a friend of mine has rented it, and it's a full black pearl type pirate ship. Actually, it's a little smaller. It's more like a sloop than an actual, you know, one of the big. The big classic.
Not quite as big as the ones at Disneyland.
No, but this was a sloop that was really outfitted to look like a pirate. It actually is a functional pirate ship. It's got a galley and everything. And they built it to, you know, rent out for movies and everything. And and I would love to hire that boat or one like it and then sail it down there and then just dock it next to the convention center. And just stay aboard the pirate ship, go to the convention, you know, for an hour or two, but just have people over to the boat and just spend the whole time drinking.
That'd be great.
Yeah, but yeah, it would be great. But then again, you know, you're gonna have people barfing all over the place. And at the end, I gotta clean the boat. And it's not as romantic.
It just sounds like a nice like retreat. You're so close to the con, and then you're at home or whatever that is. You know, you're at a comfortable place, and you can just take that anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Sail around the world and then come back next July for more of the same. That's a fantasy. Have you ever wanted to sail around the world or something like that or go on a boat?
I actually am one of those few people that never had the urge to take a boat ride or cruise or anything like that.
Have you ever been on one?
No.
Really?
Well, I mean, I've been on boats before, but not a big cruise line or anything substantial.
Uh-huh.
And never for, like, days on end.
Mm.
It's fun. One of the boats I've been on, sank recently.
Really?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
You weren't on it, were you?
A few years after I went on it, sank.
Okay. What kind of a boat was it?
A cruise ship.
Like a Carnival cruise ship?
It was Norwegian Cruise Line.
Wow. I didn't think those things could sink.
Yeah. I was surprised to hear it. They're like, yeah, it sank. And I'm like, was anyone on it? Did they let it sink? What happened?
Yeah, that wasn't a big one that happened a while ago.
It was. Was it? It was only like 3 years after I did it, so
wow.
Could have been a while.
I sailed from Australia to Tasmania on a, you know, boat, and there's a boat that goes from Melbourne to Tasmania, so okay. I took it back and forth, and that was nice. It was sort of like a small luxury liner. You could actually spend the night on it, you know, because it's, I don't know, it's a fair distance between the mainland and the island, but it's a. I got on it at night, and then the next morning I got off, and okay. And it was, you know, fine.
There it's
was
like taking a train across a country or something.
Yeah. It was a bad storm that night though, and it was really pitching, and the water was washing over the side. But it was fun. It was very romantic because it was, you know, I was there by myself, and I was like the only one eating in the kitchen, mm-hmm. you know, in the dining area, and I really liked being on the boat. And there were very few people on it, and really, it was just like pounding waves. And I thought, "Oh, this is adventure."
That worries me because I don't know. Are you prone to seasickness?
No, I've only been seasick once, and it took me by surprise.
I find that whenever I'm on a boat, if I don't see land, I get really seasick from just the up and down motions.
Really,
if I don't have something to focus on and center myself on that I know is stable somewhere, yeah,
Let's see. I was fine that night. I was fine the 2 weeks later sailing back. It was, and then I took a boat around. Some years later, I took a boat around Indonesia for about 2 weeks, and I was on a schooner, and we sailed from Bali to Sulawesi and Komodo and all the little islands, and I saw all the wildlife, saw the Komodo dragons and everything. Oh, nice. All through the, you know, the Lesser Sundas areas. And we actually had a run-in with some pirates who kind of gave us a once-over, but we were too close to land, so they kind of, you know...
Oh, yeah.
We beat them into port, but later on they came into port and we could see them, you know. They're pirates. It's not very romantic. It's just guys with guns, you know.
Yeah, nowadays pirates, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't, you know, hey, Jolly Roger!
Although like, that would be awesome.
All right, give me your camera or I'll kill you. It's like, here's my camera.
Yeah.
But I was fine with that. And, you know, I really enjoyed that boat ride. That was a lot of fun. But then I went down to the Great Barrier Reef. And I was staying on an island off the Great Barrier Reef. And I went far out on the reef one day. And I got whopping bad, unbelievably seasick.
Really?
It's the only time in my life I've ever been seasick.
And I got on this boat. Land, technically.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I got on the boat that was uh-huh. going to take us out far under the reef.
Uh-huh.
And for whatever reason, the minute I got on the... It might have been anxiety. I was with a group of people that I didn't know. I was staying at this little resort, and I was staying by myself. And I think that if I had gone out there with one or two people, it would have been fine. But then again, there were a bunch of people I didn't know, and... It was sort of, they were treating it kind of like a party, and I just wanted to go out there and try out my underwater camera, and I didn't want to be sociable with anybody. I didn't want to talk to anybody. It's just take me out where it is, and it was only once I got in the water that I felt okay. When I was actually snorkeling, I felt like okay, this is okay. I'm okay now. Then I would get back on the boat, and either rocking of the boat or the make of the boat or something, it just made me sicker to my stomach.
Uh-huh.
That's the only time I've ever been seasick. Before that, I didn't think I could get seasick, but apparently.
I think what would be a good pirate scam would be to lead a tour group.
Yep.
And then have an arrangement with pirates like Queen Elizabeth did, where you kind of give them the cue and then they come and rob the tourists.
Right.
And then you guys split the bounty. And then when you get to shore, you also have the police on the payroll. So when you get to shore, they make all of these arrangements with the police. Oh my goodness. And they file their reports and then the police come and collect their percentage and everybody's happy except the tourists who are leaving the country anyway.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
That sounds like a good scam and a worthy one. However, you're dealing with pirates and they may just, you know, double cross everybody.
Well, then you just kill them.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
She'd make a good pirate.
She'd make a good pirate. Well, she's a pirate consultant,
actually. Oh, okay.
She's in tune with all the, you know, the dark forces, which includes everything from, you know, black sorcery to, you know, piracy and... highway robbery and everything like that, and, you know, highwaymen's and poisoning for hire, things like that, things of that nature. Suspect. Anyway, but so yeah, I don't know. Piracy is a growing business. You know, you can make a lot of money at that. It's come back with a fervor.
Oh yeah, the Johnny Depp movies really brought it back swinging.
Yeah, yeah. I really think that. Yeah, I saw a preview for a movie that's coming out this fall, which is about, you know, Tom Hanks plays a captain whose boat was taken by Somali pirates. And the Somali pirates are okay, but they just don't have that dash and dazzle to them, you know. There's not enough cutlasses and parrots and too many, you know, ways to actually get hurt, you know.
More, yeah, that's too many the Uzis. Unfortunate side of it.
Yeah. We need more... More parrots, less Susies.
More pieces of eight. More, you know, yo ho ho.
Yeah.
More rum.
More rum. Well, I think, you know.
Maybe enough rum.
Maybe enough rum.
You can have some rum right now. You want a shot of rum?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't want a shot of rum. Oh. Could I have another piece of pizza?
Yeah, I'll bring it to you in just a second.
Thanks.
You want something
else? No, I'm good. Thank you.
My only hesitation about rum is fine when you've got a crew that's limited to cutlasses and blunderbusses that they have to load. When you've got rum and Uzis and rocket launchers and everything like that, I tend to worry a little bit.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't end well.
No. Not that you can go out there, you know, stone cold sober and, you know, use that stuff. I think you need a little bit of a bracer. But yes. If you're going out there snockered on Captain Morgan, then, you know, I don't know what your chances would be. So I went to New York last week.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
That was great. It was fun. Yeah.
Business or pleasure?
Pleasure.
Oh,
great. Actually, it was a little impromptu trip that I sort of made up my mind I would do like 2 weeks ago because my sister, Jane, was going to New York to do something in preparation, to see some museums. She works at the Detroit Institute of Art, but she was going to New York to, I think, look at some things that she may bring to her museum for a coming show.
Okay.
Or something. She's doing a show on dance, at any rate.
Oh, nice.
So she went to look at costumes and to go to the New York Ballet. And my mom was going with her. She said to mom, why don't you come with me? And mom said, okay. And I decided to sort of tag along, less out of going to sightsee, more because I was worried a little bit. My mom's, you know, 82 and still in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
But she gets tired easily, and I was saying, and I just kind of put it out there, like, you know, I've got nothing happening toward the end of that week. You know, my schedule looks open for a couple of days. Would you like me to come to New York with you, and, you know, if you need help, like walking around, getting in cabs, just, you know, doing stuff like that? And she said, yeah, absolutely. Not that she really needed the help, but I think she just sort of appreciated the company, and that if she was going to overdo it then, oh, hey, let's, you know, head back to the hotel or something like that. So that was really my main reason for going.
And I'm sure your sister might get busy at times and she'd be by herself.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, my mom usually, when she's traveled, when I travel with her by ourselves, or, you know, when she's been in a family group or something, my mom will go until, like, she's ready to drop.
Yeah.
She came over once or twice when I was working on the Arkham games. And she had no interest in going to the studio or seeing how the games were done. And I had to work most of the days anyway. But I'd say, you know, do you want to, you know, they're giving me a hotel room for a week. Would you like to come? And she goes, yeah. So I would go off and work. I'd come back and she'd be sitting there and she'd be bandaging her toes. And I'd say, what did you do? And she goes, well, I walked until my feet bled. And I said, well, you shouldn't do that. You know, you have a bus pass. Jeez. The first thing she does when she gets off the plane is get a bus pass for the London buses. But she'll take the bus to a part of London that she likes and just sort of wander for miles and then get back on the bus and go back to wherever we were staying. So I didn't want her to overdo it in New York, but apparently she was fine. It turned into more of a family affair than I thought because my sister was there. And then my sister... in-law, Lizzie, was in Vermont because her daughter is getting ready to graduate. So they heard that everybody was going to be in New York, so they came down. So
that's not too far of a trip.
No, no. Yeah, and so mom had more than enough people to shepherd her around and keep her company and make sure she didn't, you know, walk till her
shit. I bet she had a blast.
She had a great time. Yeah. And there was one day we all got together for breakfast and we walked to a couple of churches and then museums. And once we got to the Met, I sort of begged off because I'd been to the Met, you know, within the last few years, and mm-hmm. I just if there the kind of crass truth of it is, if they're not dinosaurs or marsupials or reptiles on display in the museum, I don't want to go. You know, I don't care if they're Fragonards and Chagalls and beautiful paintings and everything. We walked by the Guggenheim, and I was actually up for the Guggenheim, and I said, I want to go in the Guggenheim. It's like, no, we're going there later. It's like, we're going to the Met. And I go, the Met's so big, and half of it is being renovated, and it's all the way on the other side of the street, and the Guggenheim is here, and it's fun, and it's jolly and weird looking. Let's go there. And it's like, no, we're going to the Met. So I basically went home. I went back to my hotel and fell asleep. But that was fun. It was a good time. I took her out for a really swanky lunch at one of the top restaurants. That was sort of a Mother's Day present. We went to a restaurant called Jean George, and we had food I can't pronounce. Everything is just wonderful, and it's whipped to a froth, and it's delicate, and it's tiny.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all size of a silver dollar.
Yeah, it's the size of a silver dollar, and it's like everything on the plate is like, $85. And we have a delicate little, offering here, and it's like a little half a slice of American cheese and something green on top of that, surrounded by some lettuce, and it's $85. And then, so you eat like three of those, and that's your
gastronomy
lunch.
Gastronomy design with flecks of gold on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mom loved everything. And it all tasted really good. It was great. But, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm in my hotel room. I'm starving. So I run down. I get dressed. I couldn't sleep. I was that hungry.
Well, good thing it's New York.
Yeah. I got dressed. I ran downstairs. I went to Wohop down in Chinatown.
Oh, yeah.
Wohop is a great Chinese restaurant. And it's down on Mott Street. And there's one above ground, but you want to go to the one in the basement. That's the serious Wohop. That is classic old style New York Cantonese style Chinese food.
Do you need a special password to get down in the basement?
No, you just go down the basement. Okay. You just go down the basement steps, and you go in there, and there are these attentive waiters all wearing blue jackets, and they seat you down, and they give you a menu that has every conceivable item on it. And you just, enjoy classic old style Chinese food.
Wow.
It's the Chinese food that all my Jewish friends would go out for on Christmas. They fled places like Wohop just to get the good old, pineapple duck and everything that's on the menu. So that was my remedy to the artsy food is just a Wohop run. And I ordered like two things and some rice, and it's so much you can't even eat it.
Yeah, no matter how much you order or how little you order, you end up leaving full.
Yeah.
That's Chinese food.
I ate 4 bites of the duck and 2 bites of the beef, and I had them package up everything. I go out and get into a cab, and I said to the driver, would you like this huge stack of food? He says, yeah, sure, fine. You're paying for your ride, aren't you? I said, yeah, with money, yes, I am.
This isn't the barter system.
No. Yeah, no, I'm not going to, barter, pineapple duck for a ride back to my hotel. It's just like, I've got no ice box in my room, and I have no desire to eat this, 20 minutes after it's not hot. So
yeah.
I'm just going to leave it with you if you would like it. And he said, thank you. So it was nice. The supper that night, and it was great. I've forgotten how much fun it is running around New York at 3 in the morning, as long as there's nothing running after you.
True.
But I have walked for, miles late at night through New York, a couple of years ago. I mean, a couple of decades ago when I'd spend more time there. And I remember going out with friends and just walking all night through the city and not seeing another soul.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, a kangaroo-sized rat would, be sitting there eating a bag of trash or something, or a cop would come by, but usually it was just like, and there's people all around you, but it's just there's something about New York between 3 and 5 in the morning. It's the Batman time, where criminals are up to no good in warehouses and secret hideaways, but sometimes on the street you can just walk for miles and not see anything, and just kind of a magical time.
Mm.
Yeah, it's fun. So it was fun getting back there for some of that.
I'm going to sing a song.
Please.
Where is Thumpkin? Where is Thumpkin? Here I am. Here I am. How are you today, sir? Very well, I thank you. Run away. Run away.
Frère Jacques, Frère Jacques.
That's not a thumb. You are silly. You're supposed to sing it using all your fingers like I did when I was five.
Oh, because where is Thumpkin? You're asking because you're the finger.
No, where's Thumpkin? And then you go, where's...
Here I am. Here I am.
You never heard it?
How are you this morning? Very well, I thank you. Run away. Run away.
And then you move on. Where is Pointer?
I was just singing the French word. I know there's another
verse. To teach kids their fingers. And this is Tall Man.
Oh, wow, really? Uh-huh. So you're giving somebody the Tall Man when you're driving by in traffic?
Really, I would have said his name is Jersey. Where is Jersey?
Yo, I'm right here!
What do you care? What do you care?
Nice. Yes. Did you tell them about Flame and Mamie and the Firecracker Man?
Yeah, we talked a little... Well,
No, that was off the air.
We didn't record it, so... Yeah. Come on up, boys.
Yeah, they got a couple awesome little ornaments on their mantelpiece.
Oh, we got more coming.
Oh, yeah?
Memorial Day, they're going to stay up through July.
Nice.
We have so many. We're not quite to Halloween status with the 4th of July stuff, but we're on our way.
We're comfortably pulling up next to Easter, as far as that goes.
Yeah, Easter's still winning.
Yeah.
But it's getting up there.
Easter
and I think
still
it's really
looks like it's hanging around a little.
Well, the little chickens, yeah, they're pretty lazy. I just left them up because it was spring. I decided they were spring chickens.
Got it.
Yeah.
But now it's summer, and they're not summer chickens. So we have drums and ants with paper hats on and all kinds of
things. The parading picnic ants.
Mm-hmm.
They
can come down tonight if you like.
I love the picnic
ants. Now that I've cleaned your kitchen.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. He says cowering.
Cowering, yeah.
Yes. I changed the sheets on the bed today, too.
Did you?
And I balanced the budget, and I wrote out all the bills, and I did four
paid
auditions.
All the bills.
And I worked. What?
Yes. Paid all the bills?
I did?
Yes.
I did transfer. I did a payroll. I did a lot.
I went to two recordings and finished an episode of Spider-Man.
I had two meetings about my television show.
Great.
What else did I do? I mentioned the auditions already. It's been a day.
Yeah.
It's like domestic day, you know? That was boring. What a contribution I made.
You know, I don't think we've told anybody about Deuce.
Oh, yeah.
About Deuce, we did a whole podcast.
Well, for him.
About him being better.
Yeah.
Did we?
But yeah.
The jukebox.
Oh, that
about
was
him
yeah.
Being better.
Yeah, but we didn't tell him what happened or anything.
Do you even know?
I only know vaguely because
Well, I'll tell you guys what happened. He was on medicine for mange. Interestingly enough, he came up with a little parasite called Demodex mange, and we're not really sure why he got it, but we suspect that he got it because he received a bunch of steroidal treatments over the summer for stings and bites and skin issues and things that he was having. They kept injecting him with antibiotics and steroids. Steroids can suppress the immune system, which would allow mange to tip, you know, like all dogs have mange.
Yeah.
It's just whether or not the mange win. You know, their immune system can typically fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was on this medicine called ivermectin because his immune system wasn't strong enough to fight it.
Uh-huh.
So Paul gave him, they were going to have a bath 2 weeks ago, and Paul said, should I give him this Trifexis, which is a anti-flea thing that the doctor had prescribed for him? And she didn't tell us not to give it to him. And the problem is when you put Trifexis, which already has ivermectin in it, and he was exhibiting signs and symptoms of sensitivity. He was waking up blind in the mornings and stuff from this mange medicine. And I said, I don't think it's good for him. And the doctor and everybody said, yes, it is. He's got to stay on it. There's nothing else we can do. So we continued with the ivermectin, but when Paul gave him the Trifexis, it was too much for his little system to handle. And he went into complete toxic shock, and he was flailing, like he had no control of his muscles, and he was herky-jerking, having seizures, and he was completely blind. He couldn't see, he couldn't walk, he couldn't move. He had fallen off our 3.5-foot-high bed onto the floor, and he couldn't really breathe.
And we were wiped out, especially me, because I had given him... I had insisted that he get the medicine every night, and I'd given him the Trifexa, so it's great. Oh, I poisoned my dog, and he's doing things I've never seen a dog do as far as spasms.
Yeah.
We took him to the hospital, I was beside myself.
But it's fine, and you didn't do anything. I mean, you know, you couldn't help it. The medicine was prescribed to him.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, they should have known. But that aside, there are people trying to get us to sue the vet, and we really kind of don't want to do that. So, I mean, we could. We certainly would have a case, especially if he had passed away. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. He's alive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so I don't really want to talk about that. But what I do want to talk about is the fact that when he went in there, because of his seizure, he inhaled saliva and mucus, which gave him pneumonia. Yeah.
Oh,
and he had, when he first went in there, at best a 50-50 chance of survival. They said, this is not good. Now, a couple years ago, we had another little dog named Worf. And Worf was in an oxygen cage for because he also caught pneumonia.
Uh-huh.
And Worf's ending was very different. Worf passed away owing to, interestingly enough, another malpractice issue where they were shortening his palate, and they shortened his palate too much, so every time he ate food, it would go right into his lungs.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was really difficult seeing another Little Boston just two or three years later in the exact same situation with the tubes coming out in an oxygen cage with a not very good chance of survival.
And especially when they were telling us he wasn't eating and you know, I just thought, well, you know, whatever he eats is going to get into his lungs. It was just...
It was really terrifying.
It was like reliving a horrible, horrible experience again. And, you know, it almost in same detail. And we couldn't help but think, God, what if this ends the same way?
No.
And thank God we had Muggsy, because Muggsy...
Who just had surgery. Like
but
2 months ago.
He knew. Muggsy is the most intuitive dog that I've ever met. And right on Muggsy's chest, right where his heart is, he has a big heart-shaped spot, which is really unique, but it's very telling because he's very sensitive and he knows what's going on.
Well, I'm convinced he saved my life when I was up in Jen Lake. I'm convinced of it. Did I ever tell that story on here? I can tell it very briefly, when
Deuce was in the hospital, Muggsy would get on the bed and sleep with us and, you know, like curl up with us and you know, was very in tune with us. He knew that Deuce was gone, and he knew that we were he was sick, and he knew that we were, you know, almost to the point of grieving, and he was just there for us. You know, he's just a wonderful, wonderful pup. He's very, very, very sensitive, very empathetic pup. You were going to say when...
Well, when I was up at June Lake, I was really sick when I was undergoing that CIA training and the FBI training with the Scotland Yard guys, too. And I was really sick. It was one of the worst colds I've ever had in my life. And a woman who was there from Australia, also learning, said, take some of this medicine. It's herbal, it's organic, it's wonderful. It'll knock you out a little bit, but it's really good, and you'll feel better in the morning. So I took that and some NyQuil, and I went to bed. Well, those two things did not match. And while I was laying there, starting to go to sleep, my consciousness was split, literally split. It was like a box, and right down, almost like a tennis court, and right down the middle, on the left-hand side was a purple sparkly side, and on the right side was pure black. And I wanted to go over into pure black so bad, and my consciousness was fighting and pulling me into this purple twilight. And I was literally, like, I was just about to surrender because it would feel so good to just get to sleep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who knows what that would have been? But the phone rang, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And he was frantic. And I said, what is the matter with you? Because he woke me up out of... It was almost like I was drunk. I was so drugged. I was staggering. I picked up the phone and I couldn't even really speak English. It took a second for my brain to catch up. And he said, Muggsy is a frantic mess. I cannot get him to calm down. And I said, put me on speakerphone. And I said, Muggs, I said, what's going on? And he goes, okay, he's starting to calm down. And I don't know if Paul hadn't woke me up, if I would have woke up the next morning. It's so weird. And as soon as Muggsy heard my voice, he calmed right down. And Paul kept me on the phone for half an hour so that I could stay conscious and work that drug out of my system. I'm convinced he saved my life. Jeez. I mean, it sounds so weird and so like, but it's not. And when Deuce got out, after we'd had him only 2 weeks, Muggsy came running into my office and he's stamping his feet. And I knew just by the way Muggsy was behaving that Deuce had escaped the yard.
Wow.
I knew it. I mean, he came in and he's so communicative and he's so intuitive and protective and he's just a marvel.
Muggsy always knows.
Deuce is so funny and he's so... But the short... I mean, going back to Deuce's story, every single day he got better and better and better. And now he's so fully functional. He's off the ivermectin. Now, ivermectin poisoning, they typically bounce back from pneumonia, not always. So the ivermectin poisoning, they knew he would recover from even though it was difficult. But he had the best vet care. The woman called me in the middle of the day and said, look... It's really weird, but I study this stuff, and I'm a neurologist. We took him to an emergency place that had specialists on staff. That's their dinner. Uh-huh. I'll go get it in just a second. But she said, I was just reading about something they're doing in human medicine for people who have been poisoned, and they inject fat into the bloodstream because this toxin specifically attaches to fat, and that's how it's metabolized.
Interesting.
And she said, so if we can get it into his bloodstream, you know, really, and we can get him to metabolize that double fast... These seizures will stop. He's at less risk for pneumonia. He's at less risk of dying. Because if he continued to inhale saliva and stuff, because, I mean, he was like, he couldn't even really breathe. Yeah. So she said, we've got to stop these seizures. If we stop the seizures, we can, you know, try to stop him from catching pneumonia. They injected the fat. It absolutely worked. And she's going to write a paper on it because I don't think it's ever been done for a dog.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hicks. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Hicks.
Yeah. And an entire neurology team was on him.
Yeah.
And so that worked, but he did get pneumonia. Once the tremor stopped, they were able to take an x-ray of his chest, and he did have pneumonia. But he goes back next Wednesday for his checkup. So that's what's going on with him. And he is better now. I don't know if you guys...
I was noticing when we first came in, he was howling. He's like...
He's back to being Deuce again.
Yeah, he's so lively, like more so than first met him. Yeah.
Right. Well, but also more so definitely than he has been the past couple months that medicine.
Yeah.
We were slowly poisoning our dog and nobody believed us. And we would go in and say, I kept saying over and over, this medicine's bad. Dr. Mommy was right.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it's you're just with really
them, like 24/7.
Well, we know him.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, this is dogs don't wake up blind in the morning. And the girl at Boston Buddy said, I think he's old and I think he could be having seizures and maybe he's having little strokes. And I said, or maybe it's the medicine since he wasn't exhibiting any of this stuff before he started taking it. And she said, it's highly unlikely. And they were all right. It is highly unlikely. But we even had
unlikely.
Well, it's right. It's still likely. There's still a little bit. Yeah. It's not impossible. So, but I even had them genetically tested. Because there's a test out of University of Washington to see if dogs have a genetic predisposition to be sensitive to this ivermectin. We had them tested. I mean, it was like a $300 test per dog. And it came back, no, they should be just fine. So they put him back on the ivermectin. And again, he started waking up blind. And this time he almost died. I'm going to get their food.
I don't know. You know, it's like sometimes people change. Dogs must change too. Like you could, for a long time, I thought I had no allergies to any medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just didn't, you know. I've had various things. I've had penicillin, I've had this, I've had that. Every time I've been sick and been on something, the doctor says, are you allergic to anything? I said, no. So I was taking some medicine about a year ago that had sulfa in it. And I've never had any sort of allergic reaction to it. Yeah. And then this time it just knocked me on my ass.
Wow.
And I don't know if it was something that, like, my body has changed and I can't tolerate it. But the thing was, I remember being on it and having no symptoms whatsoever. And then I was going to lunch with my dad over, he lives over in Pasadena. And it was a nice day, it was a hot day. I was in my convertible and I put the top down and I drove over there. And it's 20 minutes to Pasadena. And then I drove back the same way, 20 minutes back. And that's when I got rip-roaring sick. And then I looked on the thing, and it says, do not go out in sunshine if you're on this, you know.
Oh.
And so it's like, I probably did it to myself. Maybe just the fact that I had this, I was out in the sun, even though I'm just cruising around in my car on a very hot day.
Yeah.
That could be what did it, so.
Yeah, I just could have greased
it. But now I tell people, you know, no sulfa if I have to have medicine.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you get laid low by something you don't even expect. Some years back, I was in Hawaii. And every time I go to Hawaii, I have a lot of relatives there. It's usually been in like late summer to the latter half of the year. You know, I've been to Hawaii maybe, I don't know, 15 times. And every time I've gone, it's like I say, it's you know, like late summer, August on to January. Because I'm usually go around the holidays or when I was a kid, I would go before school starts.
Mm-hmm.
This one time I was over there about 15 years ago, I went in early, it was late spring. It was just like the end of May. And I got so sick, I couldn't breathe. And I'm going like, what's the deal? I've been here at that time, like 10 times before, and I've never gotten sick. Never, ever. And water was pouring out of my eyes. I couldn't breathe. I was lurching around my uncle's house where I was staying. And I had to lie down all day. And it was like I'd climbed Mount Everest. I could not get any air in my lungs. And he says, well, why don't you, better go to the emergency clinic and have them look at you. I went in, they had to put me on a respirator. And I had to breathe, and you know, just to keep myself breathing, I went to emergency, to full on emergency, to where they had to put a mask on me. They did some tests and they discovered that I was wildly allergic to certain grasses and plants that only flower during the end of the spring rainy season, that all of them together, flowering, had caused this reaction in, wow, in my respiratory system. So they put me on an inhaler, and they gave me some heavy duty antihistamines, and they gave me an inhaler, and then I was all right, you know. But right up until that point, I thought, well, I'm going to go home if I can get home. But I was headed toward the oxygen cage where you were last week, Deuce, and because they had to keep pumping my lungs full of air, and it was just like I had no idea I was allergic to all that stuff.
Yeah. So
a couple of years after that, when I went to Indonesia, and I was doing, you know, some heavy duty work in the jungles in Sumatra, you know, I wanted to make sure that I got the same medicines and inhalers and stuff, because I didn't want to be even worse in a foreign country and then have the same attack by that. So, you know, I just made sure that I kept that with me whenever I was in the jungle, because it's just a reminder, you know, you're in a different ecosystem, you know, you never know what you're going to run into.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I went to Thailand once and foolishly ate oysters in the heat and got dysentery, and I never thought I'd ever get something like that before in my life.
Oysters in
they were sitting out in the sun, and my uncle foolishly said, "Let's eat here," and he lives there.
Did he have the oysters?
Yes, but he's been eating there forever, so his constitution is used to it.
Yeah,
and mine wasn't, and I was the first day in that country, just off the plane. And the next day I had dysentery, and it was not a friendly rest of my trip.
No, I mean, I've only been able to take seafood when it's ice cold. You know, when it comes out like that. Oysters fresh out of the shell are great.
Yeah.
Or you roll them in crackers and a cracker meal, and you fry them, and that solves the problem too. You know, but sitting around warm oysters, as much as I like shellfish, I would never.
I didn't think they were. I mean, they weren't warm, but they were sitting out in an open market sort of restaurant.
Yeah.
So, just be careful.
Yeah. It's when I went through Sumatra, there were little restaurants to eat at, and these were more like little home cooking stands, and I had a guide who was taking me through the island because I wanted to see all the nature reserves there, and so we would drive for long stretches of the day, and then we'd come to a place, and there'd be like, you know, a little cafe where you could go in and sit down, but all the food was out on display. Mm-hmm. So it's like in big bowls, or it's, you know, in the case of fish, they're sort of hanging by the grill and everything.
Okay.
So if you wanted some rendang, which is like beef in a red spicy sauce, they would just slop it out of the bowl and give it to you and put it over some rice. And it was made early in the day, and it was still warm, but it wasn't kept warm by heat lamps or water or anything like that.
Warm by room temperature.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the room temperature there is 97 degrees. So there's that. But still, it was, I think, you know, if you wanted the fish heated up, they would put the fish, which is already cooked, on the grill for a minute, you know, and heat it up a little bit. But you're taking your chance, kind of like what you were eating there. And after my second week in Indonesia, I kind of got to know by sight what was chicken, what was beef, what was other. You know, like, I'd look at something and I'd say, is that dog? Because, you know, is that dog? Dog. No, because I don't want to eat dog. They look at the same bowl. No dog. It's like, that's dog, isn't it? It's like, do you want dog? Because it might be dog.
It's like my mother trying to sneak foods I hated past me as a kid. Oh, no, this isn't squash. It looks like squash. No, it's not squash. This is squash.
Yeah. Yeah, because chocolate doesn't look like that. I actually went to a chocolate plantation when I was in Sumatra.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the big cacao pods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, broke open one, you see all the seeds and everything. And you have to take them out and then roast them and then break them up. And it's a long way before they're... You just can't eat it off the tree. But I opened one, and there's all the good gooey stuff. I opened another one, and there was this explosion of insects.
Oh, man.
It was like the world's worst pinata. Just because they had gotten in there and were eating the cacao beans from the inside out. And
That's got to turn you off of chocolate for a little while.
Well, a little bit. Oh, no, the big turnoff in Indonesia as far as fruits and vegetables goes is the durian fruit.
Oh, that's just not friendly.
No. What? Yeah. It actually tastes a little bit better than it smells. because it smells like shit. And I'm not saying that.
It actually smells
like excrement. And then you eat it, and it's a little like pudding, but it doesn't taste that great. but it has a high alcohol content. And what people would do in Sumatra if they were looking to party is they'll rent a hotel room, they'll get durian fruit, and then they'll get alcohol, and they eat the fruit and drink booze on top of it and just get, you know, blasted out of their skulls. And so there's a sign in all the rooms like, no durian fruit. You're not allowed to take it into your room.
I could see people like sneaking it in, like they're, you know, waiting for the next fix.
Yeah. I mean, oh God, that stuff's awful. I mean, there are certain times of the year that the streets in Sumatra, they grow them everywhere. It's not like pumpkin season here, except, you know, you're happy to see pumpkins. It's not. Pumpkins don't look a big spicy spiky football because it's got all these spikes on it, as if to say, do not touch this. This is lousy fruit.
Yeah, it's a warning, I thought, when your fruits and animals and stuff had spikes and poisons on them.
Not only does this smell bad, it's got spikes. So somebody looking at it and goes, hey, whatever's in there must be pretty good. Because it wouldn't have all that stuff there. It's not like an apple that you can just eat, you know?
Yeah. Those suck.
Give me the big spiky thing that's going to rip my flesh and then smell real bad and make me take me out of my head. I'm going to have some of that.
You think they're related to the corpse flower?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that thing. Stinko. Boy, Madame Sumatra just reeked with the durian fruit when I was there because it was in season. And like I said, it's like 98 all the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of hot and sticky. And
you didn't come across that giant rat out there, did you?
The giant rat of Sumatra? No. From the Sherlock Holmes story? Yeah. Saw everything else. Bears, tiger. I was stalking a tiger for like 2 days through the jungle. And what else was there? Rhino. Caught a glimpse of a rhino in a river. Flying dragons. They're these weird, they're like lizards, are this long, and they can flatten their rib cage out, so they jump from tree to tree, and they just kind of glide like that.
Oh, wow.
They're small, though. It's not like giant.
And it's not like a flying squirrel.
It's not like Smog or anything. Well, no, it's a little like a flying squirrel, and then it glides from tree to tree.
But, I mean, they don't have webbing from like they actually have to fan out like a disc, but with their body.
Yeah, apparently there's a snake that can do it too. That's,
oh my goodness, that's frightening.
That's really great. A flying snake. That's the last thing we.
I never want to go to that country ever.
The tiger was good. It was worth it seeing the tiger and the rhino. Oh, the orangutans were awesome.
I can see tigers in Thailand.
Yeah,
yeah. Apparently, my brother went out there, and him and his girlfriend at the time got to just sit in a cage with tigers, just hang out with them.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. All I did was ride an elephant.
In a cage with a tiger?
Yeah, apparently it was like the zoo, and my uncle knew some people, and they were allowed to just come in and hang out with the tiger and pet it and like hold it and
I
stuff.
Would never get in a cage with a tiger. I never would.
Would you get in a cage with a tiger or a bear?
Neither one.
I don't know why my brother trusted my uncle after he poisoned me.
Yeah. The oysters did in Ezra. Now I got this tiger in a cage.
I'm going to have to up the ante for his brother.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a losing proposition with either animal. You know, it's like, I guess the tiger would be quicker death. He'd first probably bite you in the neck and that would be it. And
the bear would probably
smack you around for a while. The bear, would always want to see if you had something to eat. And if you didn't find anything, he'd just keep pawing at you till he scratched you open and eat that, I guess. I don't know. It's it would depend. I don't know. That said, I saw a video today about, it was online, about a lion and a tiger and a bear who live together.
Oh, my.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lioness, a bear named Baloo, and a tiger named Shere Khan, so they have whimsical names. The lioness's name is Leo, and they all live together in a big, like an animal preserve in Georgia. And they were all raised, they were all abused animals as cubs, and then they were all kind of raised together. So they all kind of romp around the enclosure and treat each other like they're, litter mates and stuff. Wow. They get along well, and they're at least, they're adults, they're at least 12 years old, so They all have plenty to eat.
That's got to be one of the cutest things ever, seeing animals that are so unlikely to hang out together just being friends.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lion is a social animal, so I guess if there's other animals that it recognizes as kindred, I guess it'll...
But a bear and a tiger and lion, yeah. The bear is the odd man in the family.
Yeah. I wouldn't say bear and a tiger are natural enemies, but they just don't have much in common with each other. I mean, you know, it's just like they're carnivores and they give each other a wide berth, but I guess they were raised in such a way that they just sort of, tolerate each other.
Are bears pack animals to a degree?
No.
No. Well, then I don't understand it.
Well, the thing is, lions are social animals, you know, because it's like the lionesses do all the hunting and they stay together, and the lion kind of is out there to basically be the security guard. He's out there roaring and keeping the other predators away and keeping other males away. And the females go out and do the hunting. And then tigers, they have loose family groups where it's like the male and the female come together to mate, but the male is generally solitary, and then the female raises the cubs. And bears are completely solitary, usually. So, but I guess, like I said, I guess it's just the proximity, and it's easier to get along than not to get along. And they're well fed, so they don't have to really, they don't have to compete for food.
The world can learn a lot from these animals.
Well, I guess so. I guess what we need is like benevolent people, aliens, to come down and lock us in big cages
and then we'll be friends.
And feed us. And it's like, well, we put the humans with the bears and we've been feeding them, but the bears keep eating the humans. We don't really understand what that's about. And the rhino just wants to kill everybody.
And stomp out fires. What is wrong with this?
Yeah. It's just sort of odd, you know. But the ducks and the rhino work great. The guinea pigs and the rhino work great. The pigs and the rhino work great. The people and the rhino, we just don't know what the problem is.
It's people. People are the problem. Yeah. It's obvious now. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, but rhino's sitting there probably just going like, oh, baby ducks, how cute. No, everybody loves baby ducks. I love baby ducks. I just don't have it in me to step on baby ducks. Oh, they put a human in my cage. He's dead. Speaking of rhinos, did you see the pictures of Paul Giamatti from Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah.
He looks great.
He does. I don't understand it yet, but he looks good. I can't wait to see something of a rhino costume if they're going to go with that.
I don't want him to wear one. I saw because they dressed him like a Russian thug. He really looks like...
Well, that's what
he's wearing the
be.
Adidas, tracksuit.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And he's got the tattoos on his knuckles.
And that weird tattoo that like makes it look like his head is severed.
It looks like barbed wire.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, he's a Russian thug. Because Russian thugs, you know, sometimes you see him around, they're wearing tracksuits and, you know, fancy jogging outfits and stuff. He really looks like, you know... A thug, and maybe if that's just his nickname, Rhino, and he never gets in the suit,
that could work.
Yeah. And when they showed him driving that big truck, and I thought that would be kind of cool if the suit is actually his truck, you know?
It's like
that's his armor, and it's just a nickname. But because when they put him, even though John Romita's a hell of an artist and everything, once he puts the big fat guy in that big doughy suit,
it is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like the Jamie Foxx images of Electro. They look fantastic.
Electro looks really cool.
Yeah.
Electro looks really cool. It's just a matter of, you know, I think I saw some footage that was taken, I think, illegally or, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Of Spider-Man having the first fight with the Rhino.
Mm-hmm.
And Giamatti was doing all these things like this, like that. And Spidey was like gesturing at him, but it was like, okay, the webs will be animated in later.
Yeah.
And then what happened was he was like this, and then his pants flew off. And it's like Spidey webs off his pants. So I think, and then they filmed Spidey walking away, kind of like, oh, I'm bad. So I guess what happened was he has a fight with him, humiliates him, and webs him up. And so maybe that's what prompts him to take the rhino juice or the rhino suit and everything and come back later.
Interesting. I did see shots of Gwen Stacy wearing a very particular costume.
Oh, her diving off the top of the bridge costume?
Yeah, that was actually spit.
She's
image
wearing
too.
like the pale green jacket and the boots and the whole thing. Yeah. She did look like she does when she takes the dive off the... Well,
so, we'll see. I mean, as far as I know, there's no Green Goblin in it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
When they cast Emma Stone, they really did, you know, like, they got her down perfectly. Yeah. The blonde hair and the headband and everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, that was the most distinctive look, you know, for a girlfriend. And in comics, because everybody else's girlfriend, they kind of blended together. Pepper, I guess, I always knew... who Pepper was because she always wore like a business suit and she had like the fiery red hair.
And the freckles,
yeah. And Mary Jane, you know, had a very distinctive look. And then Gwen. So those three, everybody else kind of blurred together.
Bless you.
But Gwen, you know, had like the best look in comics. And so when they actually, I was very sad when they polished her off because I thought like, oh man. I didn't see that one coming. That was when, you know, you could have a death in comics and it meant something.
Yeah, no, nobody was leaked in. It wasn't in any papers or websites or announced on the news.
Yeah. I actually came up when we did, when we were doing the Ultimate Spidey, I came up with these, I was sketching ideas in a story meeting one day for like a redo on the Rhino. And I liked the idea an awful lot, but we didn't go with it. But it was too radical a change of his look. Mm. I thought, would it be cool if they took, like we actually have it, like he's gotten an injection of Rhino DNA and that causes him to morph into the form he's in now. But
okay.
What I liked was, I came up with this idea, what if they took actually woolly Rhino DNA from the extinct animal and he injected him. And so I drew this sketch of the Rhino as being real tall and with like this ridge of hair that just went down his back and shaggy and hideous looking like a prehistoric rhino with the huge horn and everything. And I actually remember showing it around the room and saying, what if we go like that? What if it's instead of like, you know, the lumpy rhino, what if it's a woolly rhino and he actually is hairy and he's got this scraggly hair and everything. And it was like, let's go with our regular guy. Not every idea is good.
You taking a siesta, Emily? Misty just walked in here and put a sombrero on her head.
She said it's mine now.
Oh, it's yours. Okay. Yeah. Looks very nice.
Yes.
I'm going to put it on the banana.
There you go. I'll have to move my fez.
In celebration of Cinco de Mayo. I think that's a good session. We talked about just about everything from supervillains to Comic-Con to our dog's health to New York to... Well, I don't know, sombreros and everything else.
Yeah, we had a lot of catching up to do.
Yep, yeah. After a couple of jukeboxes and a couple of brief weeks in here, it's good to sort of chew the fat a little bit. Anyway, until next week, I am Paul Dini.
I'm Misty Lee!
And I'm Misty Lee! Yeah, there it was from the other room. Yeah. And we will we'll talk at you next week.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.